LGIM Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals.
Hi, I'm Paul Measures, Head of Intermediary Sales at LGIM, and today I'm joined by Justin Ooks, who's the lead fund manager of the multi-index range. Hi, Justin.
Hey, Paul. You right?
Very well. How are you?
Very well. Good.
We're here to talk about decumulation demystified, which I look at that subject and I think we're going to have some fun. And why do I think we're going to have some fun? I think we're with, first of all, an investment fund manager. So I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of investment talk. And I think you're going to add value around demystifying this decumulation. So
yeah, and you promised you won't mention Manchester United, which is good given the season we've started the season.
That's very early to try and strike a deal, Justin. So let's leave that one open. Good point though, well made. So I think first of all, can we start with decumulation demystified? What is it?
No, so first of all, you promised me you've read all the articles, right? So
I promised I've read those articles.
Right, so it's a series of what's going to be great thought pieces on the challenges that advisors face in building solutions for decumulation. And at the moment, we plan to write probably six pieces, maybe we'll stretch to eight, but the first one is on the 4% rule, which I think we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But also there's going to be one on covered call strategies called Call Me Mrs. Miracle. Apparently that's the film. One on, better solutions for the 4% rule called Win, Lose or Withdraw. And one of the dangers in chasing income called Yield is not into Temptation.
Yep.
So you can see we've done very well in creating titles.
Yes.
Now we just need to create the thought pieces. Yeah, it's on the 4% rule. And the 4% rule has, you know, become very popular in IFA or advisor space. And it seems to be now something that advisors are all comfortable with thinking about and talking about when building decumulation type investments.
So I get the point you're probably making or come on to make is not around necessarily is 4% the right level. It's around if someone takes that income at that level, will they run out of money? Is that the crunch?
Yeah. So I suppose a bit of background on the 4% rule. So the 4% rule is, as I say, famous rule of retirement. You just Google it, right? And it's even on Investopedia.
Whoa.
Even on Investopedia, the 4% rule. So and it was established by Bill Bengen, or William Bengen, but we'll call him Bill for today. And he established it in the early 90s. And actually, somebody today said to me that they thought I wasn't born in the early 90s, so that was a compliment. But anyway, move back on to Bill Bengen.
Justin, they couldn't say the same of me.
No comment. moving on to Bill Bengen. So for me, if Benjamin Graham is the father of value investing, then Bill Bengen is almost the founder of CRPs,
yeah.
So centralized retirement propositions. And interestingly enough, Bill Bengen, he graduated as an aeronautical engineer, then joined his family's soft drink business in New York. And after 17 years of that, where he was president for a period of time and COO, he became a financial planner in California. The paper that he did in the early 90s really looked at how retired investors can withdraw income but not outlive their savings. Okay. And he argued that the safety net, the safe level of withdrawal, the highest level of safe withdrawal was 4% of the initial investment pot. And then you can increase that with inflation, increase the numerical value by inflation every single year, and you will not run out of money for essentially 30 years. And that has become now the 4% rule, which is really ingrained into a number of financial advisors.
And as you kindly kicked off with the Man United jibe earlier on, let's put it in football terms, bear in mind the year of the World Cup, this is almost like half time. So
yes,
you know, so let's have a look in terms of, if you don't mind, there's a bit of analysis on that 30-year period, where were we at half time and what's the outlook going forward?
Yeah, so we put together the accumulation demystified paper, and we looked at the 4% rule, and we said actually, you know, if you looked at it after 15 years, you know, what would have happened if you started your retirement in each of those in each of the last 15 years, and actually the difference in the size of the pension pot is really quite stark. So the highest level of pension pot was essentially delivered a return of plus 40%, and the lowest level was minus 40%. Essentially, so you got, you know, a huge range between of outcomes for the investor, and I think, you know, one thing that advisors haven't really got to the bottom of yet is just how that 4% rule can impact on end customer outcomes, and hopefully the paper helps to do that.
So let's take that part one step further then, and you mentioned CRPs earlier on, and we're all familiar with CIPs, centralized investment processes. Now the CRP part is around not just the accumulation, the savings part where the CIP is aimed at. This is more around the expenditure of it, which you're coming on to about the 4% rule, the withdrawal. But surely most advisors already have a CRP, right?
You would think so. But you have to remember that the pension regulations, they're quite new. You've been able to draw down your pension, it is quite new. So a lot of advisors have spent a lot of time post-RDR building out centralized investment propositions, so for that accumulation stage.
Yeah.
But now they're trying to focus more on that CRP, the centralized retirement proposition, yeah, and what that really looks like. And simply, a lot of advisors, first of all, don't have enough clients, don't have many clients in that CRP box, but also that they're finding their feet as the regulations change, as it becomes clear what the regulation really means. And the regulator now has really articulated that advisors should look at the difference between their accumulation propositions and their decumulation propositions. And I think this has helped for advisors to really start to think about it.
But in that period, you mentioned point, this is only going to grow. Yeah. So as more clients go through that accumulation, you've seen a huge influx post-pension freedom. In response to that, the market's come out and launched a number of income strategies. Solutions then, income solutions. You manage both a growth range and an income range. Those income solutions, that they're the answer. Yes or no?
I think the jury's still out, actually. I think it's unclear whether income funds in their current state are the solution. There are a number of strategies out there, but very few ranges really meet the risk appetite of clients. And I think that is vitally important. If advisors are going to look forward and create something that's going to be suitable both now and on an ongoing basis, matching the solutions to clients' risk appetite is definitely vitally important. I think that is coming.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've already mentioned about Bill's research about the 4%. If I'm right around that, I think you're leading on to your asset allocation, diversification is key in this area. I think Bill's point was made around, was it 50% bonds and 50% equities, looking at the US, but that's not the real world.
Yeah, I think when you go through in the paper, you promised me you'd read it, right? So
I've read every word, yeah, Justin.
Okay.
three times.
So when you go through the paper, we highlight it's not really the weaknesses of Benger's analysis. It's just the things that you have to consider in addition.
Yeah.
The first one is, as you say, that the asset allocation that he looks at is quite a naive asset allocation. So it's kind of 50% equities, 50% bonds, or it's a fixed split between equities and bonds. But nowadays, the universe for investors, the universe that advisors have to look at, is clearly a lot more than that. You've got asset classes that go down right to a granular level. You've got the derivative market, which has really exploded, you know, since the early 90s, which gives you access to a lot more different asset classes. In addition, one other weakness, one other gap in the analysis is that every investor is different,
yeah,
and therefore if you're an advisor and you're concerned about a client's outcome, clearly you have to adjust the income based on their overall spending needs. And finally, and you know this is a big bugbear of mine, Paul, is the lack of fees in the analysis. Now, when you think about fees to me are the only thing you're guaranteed in fund management, is that fees will detract from returns year after year after year. So it's so important to manage them. And you think of over a 30-year time horizon, the impact of fees can be quite huge. So just take with one example. The overall average fee of a multi-asset fund in retail, so it's around about 1.5.
Yep.
If the manager charges 30 basis points, so 0.3%, rather than 1.5%, over a 20-year time horizon, if you assume exactly the same returns and a starting pot of £100,000, the difference in value after 30 years is actually £120,000. So it's a massive difference, and that's just simply the fees eating into the returns. The more fee you take in the early years, the less you've got to compound in future years. So managing those fees is vitally important.
So fees are important. The timing's important. You mentioned that very early on in terms of when you start to draw that income. The asset allocation is important. Why do you think this is so ingrained then? I've heard the 4% rule being quoted. Why do you think that's so ingrained in the advice process?
I think mainly because there's been a lack of in-depth research on this area.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that benefits the 4% rule is that it's quite simple. It's quite simple, it's quite understandable. And the other kind of types of research that have gone into this have been more complex, have been added more nuances. And if you're trying to articulate to the end investor what you're trying to do in terms of retirement, it clearly needs to be simple. It clearly needs to be simple. It needs to be understandable.
And if you were Bill now in 2018, what rule would you be writing?
Nice. It's a really good point. And you've led me on to the second paper in the series, which obviously won't go into huge amounts of detail today. But it's so important, I think, if you're an advisor, to recognise that different investors want different things. And there's really three key areas: asset drivers, spending drivers, and suitability. Yeah. Those, I'd call them the three pillars, so to speak, of thinking about the rule that you want to have in retirement.
And I just like to take a step back, if I can, in terms of you mentioned a couple of points: focus on total return or focus in terms of almost chasing yield. You run both portfolios, right? So you've got an income multi-index income range, and you've got the growth range as well. Why would you just not use the growth range for those income clients?
So if you use a growth portfolio and you draw down a growth portfolio, there is a chance that in volatile markets, you'll be selling down units when markets are depressed. And for a client in retirement, that may mean you never ever recover back to the level that you started at.
Yeah.
So using natural income in order to kind of meet liabilities is simply a more sustainable solution.
And if you try and link that back in terms of where we are in terms of the investment cycle, that seems relevant in terms of, I think you're saying, you know, second longest bull market since post-war. You know, your risk out there as an advisor would be, in your opinion.
Yes, it's the longest bull market, but it's the second longest economic cycle. But you are spot on. In an environment where you've seen this, you know, kind of really strong growth backdrop, and we're now starting to get more concerned about the end of the cycle. You would think, and it's not necessarily the case all the time, but you would think that volatility may pick up, and therefore, actually, we've had an incredibly strong period of very low volatility. So even if you get some sort of normalization, right, it's going to feel like volatility really picked up.
Yeah. So if you're just trying to get some actions out of this as well, because I think we've covered the theory behind the 4% rule and when that's appropriate and what the risk comes with it. You know, if you were an advisor today, what would you be saying? What would you be doing?
I would be getting the investor in, and really trying to assess their overall risk. And then once you assess their overall risk, then you can start to think about, okay, what are your liabilities? How can we meet those liabilities? What are your spending drivers? And what assets can we put together in order to meet those spending drivers?
Good. So we got the first paper out. The first paper's on the blog. Yeah, so that'd be on the Future World blog as well as the Macro Matters. So that'd be on the two blogs that's covered. I know you said the series is about to be launched. There'll be another paper coming out shortly and four or five before the end of the year on the income theme. Are there any other points of interest that you can think of that we haven't covered so far that should be pressing on one's mind?
So I think that's spot on for the decumulation side. You know, we are constantly talking to clients about late cycle dynamics, and realistically, you've got to be humble, and you only know you're in late cycle once you've kind of reached the end of the cycle. You can look back, but I think another thing which is really which clients are talking to us about all the time, advisors talk to us about all the time, is how to manage low risk portfolios. And again, there may be further papers and further thought pieces, and maybe even further podcasts. If they let us on here again, to talk about
depends on the
low risk investing.
I mean, where to get ratings, you get invited back, I think. that's good. So, I know you've got a series of roadshows coming up as well, investment conferences. They're the end of the year, so I think the first date's the 28th of October. If anyone listening to this podcast would like to look out for those, contact their normal LGM contacts. So it's a series of six. They aren't just all in the southeast; they're arranged around the whole of the UK. And I know you partner up with some other partners as well. So it's just going to be about LGM's view on this highly topical subject. I think the point you made is, you know, it's only going to grow this market as clients mature. They go through this accumulation phase into savings and taking the more into the withdrawal phase. So I think the point now is, if you'd like for further information, there's a couple of points. First of all, in the episode notes, you'll see a link to the paper which Justin's been speaking about, the decumulation demystified. And if you're interested in the title is It Time to Retire the 4% Rule? Obvious after the content we've just said today, I'm guessing. And if you like to Google that, then they are going to link as well. So that's quite key. At that point, I'd just like to say thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Paul, for
giving that insight around the 4% rule. And I look forward to the next episode, having read the paper for the last three times. So fantastic. Thanks so much.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.